Welcome to Ask Gwen, everyone. This morning I have Deidre with me, and how Deidre and I met is last Saturday. I found a FedEx package on it was actually United States Postal Service on my front door. And to those of you that know me, you guys know that my podcast is public, so anyone can find me. Anyone can nominate a book guest through Danielle on my podcast. So, needless to say, I found this package, didn't know what in the world it was. So, I open it up and find not only a PR plus package in this UP. In this United States Postal Service package, but I find a book. And this book is called Find a Place for Me. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce Deidre, and she's going to explain why she wrote this book and how she got into writing. And a huge, huge thank you to Katie from Smith Publishing for finding me. And I'm also going to try and invite Katie on the podcast to talk about her publishing journey and how she got into helping amazing authors like Deidre. Another side note, Deidre and I both have our cameras turned off, which doesn't matter to you guys, just because of better audio quality, less bandwidth on both our ends. So if Deidre goes bye-bye, don't worry about it. I'll keep nailing on. But I just want to say that Deidre's in rural internet where I used to be, so I know Deidre's pain. And with that, welcome, Deidre.
Thank you so much, Wynn. Yes, so I'm so happy that you were excited to receive the package. My publicist, Katie Schnack, who's with Smith Publicity, reached out to Wynn, and I'm grateful that she did and that we've gotten to meet. She was sharing my book, Find a Place for Me. The subtitle is Embracing Love and Life in the Face of Death. And the book is about losing my husband, Bob, of 11 years to ALS or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. He was diagnosed in December of 2011, and the children and I, our children were 3 and 8 when he was diagnosed, 4 and 9 when he passed. We lost him in a 10-month period. And so the book educates about ALS, which is a motor neuron disease that affects upper and lower motor neurons, which means it affects all of the muscles that we can control. And I emphasize that because, I often equate it to, our hearts beat. We can't hold our heartbeat. It's going to beat without any, we have no control over that. But we can hold our breath, which means that it affects our breathing. It affects your limbs and swallowing and those sorts of things. And essentially, depending on where it starts, its progression can be a little slower, a little faster, but at diagnosis, it's a terminal illness and you're told 2 to 5 years. It's often on the shorter end of that, and it certainly was for Bob. It tends to be shorter if it's already affecting your swallowing and breathing. In Bob's case, he went to the doctor because he had a twitch in his arm, and so we thought it was limb onset, but he progressed so quickly, and we later learned that the first doctor's appointment that he went to, they were seeing twitches in his tongue. So there's a question there about whether it had progressed already to the bulbar region or whether it had started there. So the book is about educating about ALS, but it is also very much about how we faced his terminal illness together. As one might imagine, when we first learned that Bob had ALS, we were utterly devastated and, could barely function in our daily lives. We were grieving and crying and having a really hard time, thinking about how we were going to manage everything. And then we were roughly a month into our mourning when we kind of looked at each other. We had a wonderful marriage, wonderful relationship, and we had been through loss together before. My father and brother, who were the last two members of my birth family, died 5 years before Bob's diagnosis, and we had grieved both of those people together. And we looked at each other and we said, "Is this how we're going to play this? You know, we've had so much joy and happiness in our lives together, and now our lives together are limited. And do we want to spend our remaining time left grieving, or do we want to spend it living and enjoying every moment we can?" And so the book is also about the choices we made to live life fully, to celebrate his life, to celebrate our lives together, to bring our kids into those celebrations, while all also simultaneously facing his illness. I have been writing. I have a doctorate in English, and my dissertation was on poetry. And so I came to one of Wynne's questions that she likes to ask people is, if you have to choose a famous person to meet, who would it be? And my answer to that is Emily Dickinson, because she was my first poet love. And I fell in love with her in graduate school, and she became the subject of my master's thesis and one of the subjects of my doctoral dissertation. And I, so poetry is sort of my first love as a genre. I've written a book of poetry and a book of short stories, fictional short stories. This is my first memoir. I didn't realize, I don't think, until I finished my studies. I spent most of my 20s in graduate school, and it took until I was in my first job as a professor teaching before I think I really understood that I loved to write, because as a student, you write all the time for someone else. You have to write. It's part of what you do to earn your degrees. And it was when I wasn't doing that anymore how much I missed it. You know, I realized how much I missed it and how I love to write. And of course, my early writing, since I was trained as a critic of literature, was in criticism. I wrote, my first book was on Robert Frost, and it's an encyclopedia type volume that is picked up by libraries. It has entries on all of his published poems and some other information. And I did some critical essays and academic journals and so on, some encyclopedia entries on authors that I loved. And then actually, around the time that I lost my father and my brother, I decided I wanted to turn more towards creative writing. And so that's been my focus since the late 2000s. But my first, and so I've been publishing in various literary journals since around 2010. And then my first book came out in 2019, my first creative volume, and that was a chapbook of poetry. And then the fiction came in 2020, and now November 1st, Find a Place for Me, my first memoir will be released.
And I have a copy of that, you guys. And as it says in the press release, it will be available on Amazon. And we are putting this episode out as soon as we can, so you guys can go over to Little Amazon and pre-order it. And let's hope that this book turns number one on November 1, because I want to see this book turn number one, because it's a educational on ALS. And those of you who did or know of the Ice Bucket Challenge, which was the rage 2 years ago, I believe, that was in honor of ALS research. And I am amazed what the caregivers do for ALS patients, because I think cerebral palsy is hard. Well, ALS is even harder because you're losing a loved one.
Yeah. And the Ice Bucket Challenge did a lot, but then I think ALS has kind of left public view
Yeah.
in some way since then. And there's just so much need, but because at any given time, so few people are living with it because it takes lives so quickly, I don't think a lot of people witness it or have firsthand experience the way they might with something like cancer. And so I think it's harder when people haven't had that firsthand experience to kind of generate that interest in a particular illness or disease. And so it's really important to me to raise awareness, encourage donations and support for research and a cure, as well as just support for people who are currently living with the illness. I'm remarried, and my husband and the children and I do the ALS walk every year, and we've been doing that. This was our sixth or seventh year doing that, and I've committed to donating a portion of the royalties, my royalties, to our ALS walk every year. And if at some point we ever aren't walking, to just donate them to the ALS Association directly, because there's just so much need. And we discovered that when Bob was ill. When it comes to, the expenses that are suddenly there for you, whether it's adapting your home or finding tools and utensils to help your loved one. Bob needed a wheelchair, then a power wheelchair. We had a no accessible access to our home, so we needed a lift outside on our deck so that he could get in and out of the house. And then just smaller things like a bed rail or something to help him extend his fingers so that he could continue to use his computer. They're so costly, and sometimes insurance covers them, sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes you just can't even wait to go through that process. Sometimes you just need to run to a store today and get what your patient needs, what your loved one needs. And so, it's a very expensive thing, and we need to have resources for folks.
All disabilities are very expensive, you guys. You can't imagine the amount of time and money I've spent modifying my home in Arizona, and you don't know how much time I spend worrying about the is my power wheelchair going to work, or does it need the battery replaced? And no, you can't always fight insurance. You can't always fight insurance. Sometimes you need a good Samaritan to help. And that's what I think. That's why I wanted to bring Dijon on, because when I looked at the subtitle, I'm like, okay, this is more than I bargained for. And I don't know if you guys remember me saying a long time ago, I was looking for firsthand experience of ALS after the Ice Bucket Challenge and all this. And so, Deidre, I think we met because it was meant to be.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. And just to add to what you were saying about expenses, sometimes it's sort of illogical what insurance will cover and what it won't too. So for example, insurance will cover a ramp to help a person to get into the van, or at least ours did at the time that Bob was sick, but would not, cover a van. So you have a ramp, but you can't get an accessible van. And that's incredibly expensive. So there was just strange things where it's like, well, we'll cover this, but we won't cover that. But that you need both of them in order to, make the person mobile. And so there were a lot of battles. And when somebody's life is shortened by a terminal illness, there's really no time to fight those battles. We had 10 months. I just needed to react as quickly as I could to what would help him in a given day.
And
And
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add, and it progresses quickly. So you wake up and, something's changed and you need to do something today,
And I was going to say, were you Bob's main caregiver, or did you have skilled nurses in the house? And did you have hospice at the end, or were you doing all this on top of, let's just say, battling with insurance? Let's just say battling with doctors and insurance, were you his main care provider, or did you have help with that?
I did not have help with that. I was his primary caregiver. And, you know, we had friends around that kind of rallied to the cause. Somebody did a GoFundMe for us, which helped us get the lift. So there were people who reached out. She was out of state, but she organized all of that. And that was super wonderful. But on a day-to-day basis, it was me and his biological family. His birth family was down in, they live in Florida, and we were in Illinois, and my family was, you know, they had all passed. So we didn't have anybody around who could just, come kind of live with us and help out. I'm a professor, and we have our summers off. We could choose to teach, but we did not choose to do that, of course. And so this summer before we lost him was when things really sped up and progressed a lot. And that summer I was kind of doing it all. And actually, I didn't even process or realize how quickly I would lose him at that point. But around early August, I thought, I'm not going to be able, our daughter was also four, you know, and she was quite young and needed a lot. Our son was at that point nine. So he was a little more independent, but I had two young kids and my full-time job I was returning to. Bob was not returning to work. So, I mean, my income was super important. I could not take time off or we would be without any income. And so early August, I contacted our primary care physician and I said, I'm bathing Bob, you know, I'm shaving Bob, I'm doing all of the care things and I'm taking care of the kids and I'm heading back to full-time work. And I don't know how I'm going to do this. Is there anything that could help? And I spoke to her nurse and within, I don't know, an hour, she called back and she said, we can enroll you in hospice. And I said, does that mean that she thinks he has less than 6 months? And the nurse said, I don't know, but she said, we can enroll you in hospice. And so I didn't have to confront the reality of what that meant because of how the nurse answered the question, but it did mean that hospice stepped in and started to get to know us just before classes started for me. And I can't tell you how much respect I have for hospice. I already had so much respect because I lost my mother when I was 23 to cancer. And they got involved just the last week of her life, but I just thought they were so amazing then. And that was in Arizona, actually. Yeah. But when hospice stepped in with Bob, it was just amazing. They were able to, like when I was at classes, they were able to send somebody over during that time and get him up out of bed and bathed and ready to go so that when I returned, you know, he was clean. And then I would be there to make him lunch and, you know, I'd make him breakfast, get him ready, head to class, race back. And so it was really chaotic. But without hospice, I don't know how we would have done it. They were amazing right up until the end of his life. And we were in a small town. And I do think being in the small town, but having some resources in that town was also fabulous because, you know, Bob used to joke, hospice is amazing. They're like they're like the medical mafia. He used to say, he said, because you call hospice and then in a few hours it shows up. It's like, I know a guy. He used to laugh about it. Yeah. But it was true. They were really amazing. I think in a large city, we would have had a harder time, even if hospice was trying to act on our behalf, just getting some of the things we needed so quickly. But because our town was only a couple miles long and yet had some resources, they were really essential.
Yeah. I believe the same thing. I had to move out of Aspen, Colorado to Phoenix, Arizona. And even though I love it, even though I love Phoenix is great for disabilities, I'm noticing that I have to be my own advocate and have other people help me be my advocate, because in Aspen, Colorado, I could get things done in 2 seconds flat because it was a small town, people know people and know me. Too in Phoenix, Arizona, not so much.
Yeah.
Not so much. So yeah, but I agree. Health is health is health. And so if, and this is my call to action, if you guys want to go support the ALS Foundation locally to you guys, please do, and just support Deidre and her journey in this new book as of November 1, because as I said, Christmas is coming up. So that's a great Christmas gift, and it educates people about disabilities. And of course, you know me, those of you who stuck around me a long time know I love my education, especially when it comes to disabilities. So, Deidre, do you plan to put this book on audio tape?
So I actually don't have the rights to do that because my publisher does. I'm hoping that it will become an audiobook because I think especially for folks with disabilities, I mean, some of us just like to listen to books anyway, but some people need that access. And so I'm really hoping that it will be picked up as an audiobook. Right now, there's an ebook version available, and then, of course, the printed version, and they're both available for pre-order wherever books are sold. I'm promoting my publisher, of course, and then you could buy it with my publisher, Regal House Press slash Pact Press. I'm with their socially conscious imprint, which is Pact Press, but the larger house is Regal House. And also any independent bookstores, I also encourage. So if you have a favorite independent, just pop in and say you'd like to order it through them, and they can go ahead and order the book for you.
And yes, you guys, as soon as I get a hold of Katie, who made this interview happen, I will talk to Katie about getting this book on audio tape so that we have one more option for you guys, because education comes in all shapes and forms, and we need to get the education out there, not only on cerebral palsy, but on ALS. And yeah, we just need to get the education out there on ALS, and we need to get the education out there on cerebral palsy, because the more people know, the more people can help, the more people can sign up to work for a hospice. Yes, I said sign up to work for hospice or sign up just be an aide in general. I can't tell you how difficult it is to find aides. I have my tricks, which I'll explain to you guys later. But please, 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 please consider going over to Amazon and buying Deidre's book. Give us the title again, Deidre, just in case people didn't catch that at the beginning.
Sure, it's Find a Place for Me, and the subtitle is Embracing Love and Life in the Face of Death. But if you just look up Find a Place for Me, and then my last name is Fagan, F as in Frank, AGAN, you should be able to find it.
You people should find it, and I'll talk to Katie at Smith Publishing to see if we can get this book on audio book, because maybe two voices are better than one. Two voices are better than one. And I know that Katie is busy with her own book, and that's why I'm bringing Katie on to talk about her own writing journey and a publishing journey and helping amazing authors like Deidre. And I appreciate Deidre's time. I know she has to get back to teaching and back to it with grading homework. And so I appreciate Deidre's time, and I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode. Thanks to you guys. Bye, you guys.